be in trouble.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
You are listening to F This Movie's occasional podcast about romantic comedies, tangentially and adjacently related to the 2010 James L. Brooks movie, How Do You Know? You are, of course, listening to How Do You Not Know? Lexi, why are you
shaking my head? Because they don't all relate to How Do You Know.
Every single film we cover on F This Movie's How Do You Not Know relates directly to 2010's How Do You Know?
No, it doesn't.
We'll get to that in just one moment. I am Mike D. You could call me Mike D. You could call me Mike Delaney. You could call me Michael. Actually, you could call me Kevin. I don't give a fuck.
How do you feel about M?
M? I like, well, yes. I mean, now
that... Do you feel like you're like in a Bond movie?
Yeah, when people call me M.
Yeah.
And I like when they call me MD, because then I feel like the doctor.
You're a doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor of love.
Right.
My name is Lexi Van Dyke. I'm also here with Mike D.
So your initials are LVD, which kind of, it makes me think of loved. Because you just take, you know how sometimes the cool people take out the vowels?
And they only leave the...
Right?
I was like a cool, like, alternative pop band from the late 2000s, before anybody else thought of it.
So, over on F This Movie, Patrick, of course, wants to... And rightfully so. Patrick is not wrong here. But rightfully so, he wants all of the programming on the website and the podcast to be spooky movie themed. And we have done that today!
We have definitely lived up to the challenge.
With a romantic comedy of the spooky movie...
Persuasion,
as the French would say. But I do want to correct Miss Van Dyke just really quick. She said, of course, that not all of our films are tangentially or adjacently related to 2010's James L. Brooks masterpiece, How Do You Know? She continues to shake her head, nah, but I will offer you this. Riddle me this. Our film today is directed by the great Bob Balaban. Okay.
The great
Bob Balaban. And Bob Balaban is a frequent collaborator with Mr. Christopher Guest.
Yes.
Right? He's in the Christopher Guest movies. Mm-hmm. Beginning with...
Waiting for Guffman, about an amateur theatrical troupe putting on a historical play for their town's 150th anniversary.
He's in all these mockumentaries, and one of the key players in these mockumentaries is Harry Shearer. And in 1979, Harry Shearer and Albert Brooks wrote a movie that James L. Brooks appeared in. So the line, it goes straight there. James L. Brooks has everything to do with every romantic comedy that we will be featuring on this show.
Sure.
No, the movie's real life. He wrote it with...
I appreciate the effort you take into stretching out this narrative as far as it will go. I'll give you this one. I'm in a generous mood today.
I'll take it. Yes. All right. What do you got for us today? We are, of course, talking about...
My Boyfriend's Back.
They say you only get one chance at life. But for childhood sweethearts, Missy and Johnny, true love will never die.
My boyfriend's back.
He came back from the dead for me.
He's a stinking zombie, you idiot.
He may be dead.
Rats.
But his heart still beats for the girl that he loves.
I would love to go to the prom with you.
Go for it, Jenny!
Pretty damned active for a dead guy.
My Boyfriend's Back, rated PG-13.
All right, Lexi. My Boyfriend's Back, 1993, directed... By Bob Balaban, written by Dean Laurie. We're going to get into the pedigree of this movie, because it's kind of bonkers, like, both in front of and behind the camera.
There's a lot of people involved in this movie.
Yeah.
And it is... When we look at the IMDb, it's kind of insane how many people are in front of and behind of the camera.
And we'll get to them just shortly enough, mm-hmm. But we heard the trailer. What's the longer synopsis of what... My Boyfriend's Back is about?
So, My Boyfriend's Back is basically about a boy, Johnny, who is in love with this girl named Missy, and he comes up with this whole plan to save her from a robbery in order to have her go to the prom with him. And the robbery ends up being switched out to someone who's a real robber from his best friend, and he ends up getting shot and turned into, and then he's killed, and then he becomes a zombie in order to come back and take her to the prom. And he's a zombie for most of the movie.
He's Johnny Zombie.
Johnny Zombie, exactly.
which I think is the movie that they watch in the movie, right?
It is Johnny the movie Zombie. They watch inside the movie.
And I think it's the movie that the producers wanted to make, too. It was originally called Johnny Zombie.
Well, that would make sense. It would actually make more sense than My Boyfriend's Back, although My Boyfriend's Back is more catchy. My boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble.
Well, it's
interesting
that
they use the song My Boyfriend's Back because he's not her boyfriend. It would make more sense for Buck to be the one who dies because that's actually her boyfriend. So it's kind of ironic that they use that song. I was thinking about that a lot, actually, the last time I watched this movie, about why they chose that song and that title.
What do you think it is?
I think it's just catchy.
Yeah.
And they had the song to go along with it, but it doesn't make any sense with the movie.
But I think it telegraphs more the romantic nature of the film, whereas Johnny Zombie kind of sounds like a Mickey Rourke ripoff, you know, DTV zombie movie.
That's true, but I think it's more in tone with what the movie is doing. Because the tone of this movie is, like, bananas.
The tone of the movie is bananas, and actually let's get to that right now, because that tone is set, of course, both in front of and behind the camera. So up front, we have Bob Balaban.
Yes.
Who did a considerable amount of TV direction. He's well known as an actor.
Yes.
He, of course, most famously, you know, before this, or before his Christopher Guest stints, he most famously played Francois Truffaut's American interpreter in Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm. Avez-vous des maux de tête, des migraines?
Having headaches, migraines.
Yeah. Irritation des yeux et du sinus.
An irritation in your eyes and your sinuses.
Yeah. Des démangeaisons, des allergies.
You have hives. You have allergies.
Des brûlures sur le visage et sur le corps.
You're burning on your face and on your body.
Yes. Who are you people?
Look at this.
Yeah, I got one just like in my living room. Who are you people?
He's that guy, you know, during...
You can recognize his voice. He has that, like, super dry delivery. Where it's taking him like 10 minutes to get out something that should take 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And
he's like a less problematic Ben Stein.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before this movie, he directs one other movie, one feature film, I should say, and that's Parents. Have you seen Parents?
No, I have not seen
with
Parents.
With Randy Quaid.
No.
That's a fantastic little horror film.
It seems
film.
To be along the same lines as this film.
I mean, in the sense that it has like this whimsical tone to it, but there's like these underbellies of like horror elements, and I mean, Parents is a little bit more sinister.
I'm gonna make a bold statement here.
Bold horror statement.
It's not really horror,
okay.
But I something along those lines. But I think if Bob Balaban had kept making movies, he would have been a more famous version of Tim Burton.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He's along those lines. He's able to keep that tone and keeping it grounded while also keeping it super weird and offbeat.
Coming soon, Randy Quaid, Mary Beth Hurt, Sandy Dennis, and director Bob Balaban bring you a fresh look at family life.
Hi.
The Lemley family is moving up in the world.
Rise and shine!
But something is eating at young Michael Lemley.
You're not scared of your room, are you?
Michael, the cellar's dark. Everything's dark at night.
His parents think Michael's problem is in his head. But Michael knows it's on his plate.
What are we eating?
Leftovers, honey.
Leftovers from what?
From the refrigerator.
Leftovers every day since we moved here. I'd like to know what they were before they were leftovers.
Before that, they were leftovers to be.
Michael, there's nothing to be frightened of.
Now, there's a new name for terror. Parents.
Bedtime.
Right, with a focus on American suburbia.
Yeah.
At least in these two pictures.
Yes.
Right, yeah. You're familiar with Parents, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with it, I haven't seen it, but it seems along those lines.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
Like, it seems like Edward Scissorhands is also a film he would have made.
So we have Bob Balaban calling the shots as director. Here we have Dean Laurie, the screenwriter, who he wrote My Boyfriend's Back, and he goes on to write Major Pain, okay? He goes on to write Major Pain, mm-hmm. All right? So high concept comedy.
Yes.
All right.
Another high concept.
Right? Yeah. And then he goes on to write, currently what he's doing are some DC animated properties. He's going to be one of the writers on the new Harley Quinn show. So then you have this like weird
that
comic
seems
book
along his style.
Right.
Though.
It does.
Yeah.
But then here's where it gets like, wah? Mm-hmm. He wrote Jason Goes to Hell.
Horror has many faces, but pure evil wears only one. And this is your final chance to see it. Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday, rated R. Starts Friday, August 13th at a theater near you.
The same year he did this.
I haven't seen that, but who produced that?
Sean S. Cunningham.
Okay, continue.
The producer of My Boyfriend's Back.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. A man who...
He saw what he could do here and said, hey, take Jason to hell.
A man who once went into the woods with Wes Craven and wanted to make a rapey porno with folk music is making My Boyfriend's Back. And he even, you know, he pulls in a bunch of, you know, well, the screenwriter for Jason Goes to Hell. He pulls in Harry Manfredini. The composer of all the Friday the 13th movies.
The music in this film is amazing. It's not, and it's not even like music. It's more like musical notes, and it's like almost a composition where it paints the whole picture. It's very zany, almost like a cartoon. Those notes he drops in, like it's like almost like Seinfeld-esque.
Let's do this.
Okay, I'm ready.
The victim's penis was found behind the AC unit.
Exactly, with all these, like, it hits the note really hard. So it hits the note really hard on what's happening on, like, that comedic beat.
Right.
And, like, this weird little noise that you're like, oh, okay, so something, this is supposed to be, like, kind of off-kilter.
Right, right. It's more like mood music.
Yeah.
Than narrative.
Like a score. Because
right.
A score seems more like... This film almost feels like it's of a different time. Like, it almost feels like it should be a period film of, like, from, like, the 50s, rather than it being kind of, like, an early 90s film. Because I feel like it would have... I don't know if they played with that idea or had that in their mind at all, because it almost feels like it should be, like one of those films from MST3K that they would cover. Like, it was made during that time.
Yeah, like Teenagers from Outer Space, or Caveman.
It feels like that.
Yeah, and I think that's what Bob Balaban was going for.
And
ultimately.
I think that's what makes it really successful.
Yeah. But you know, you talked about the time period of this movie, and there is nothing more 90s than this cast. There's a couple surprises in the cast, mm-hmm. and a couple surprises that got cut from the cast. We'll save that for a second. Let's just focus on who's on the screen right now. It does not get more 90s than this.
I'm going to give you a list. Mm-hmm. So we have Edward Herman as the father, mm-hmm. Mr. Dingle.
The great Edward Herman.
Yes.
R.I.P.
And then we have Mary Beth Hurt as Mrs. Dingle, the mother.
Mm-hmm.
We have J. O. Sanders as Sheriff McCloud.
J. O. Sanders is amazing. He's in like every movie at this time.
Yes,
too.
He's in a lot of films.
He's that guy. And you know what I thought about when I saw J. O. Sanders? I was like, oh, you know who this is nowadays?
Who?
He reminds me of David Harbour.
Yeah, they look. I was like, oh my gosh, it looks exactly like him. Like they could swap them out and he would be in the same film. I think that's probably who they were casting in the Stranger Things TV show.
You think they're casting for a J.O. Sanders?
Yes.
Right. But shout out to V.I. Wachowski. I know Patrick loves that one, so I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up V.I. Wachowski in talking about J.O. Sanders. Also, shout out to my JFK peeps, because I love them in JFK. What up, dogs? Who else is here?
All right, we have Matthew Fox as Buck.
God.
Horrible human being, Matthew Fox.
Terrible.
Allegedly. So don't get sued. Philip Seymour Hoffman as Aww. Chuck Bronski. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of his first films. And then Paul Dooley as Big Chuck, as his dad. Austin Pendleton as Dr. Bronson. We have Bob Dishy as the Gravedigger. Cloris Leachman as Maggie, the zombie expert.
Aww.
And then Matthew McConaughey making his film debut.
In the cinema. Yeah.
Where we see Johnny Zombie.
Yeah, he's guy number two.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Renee Zellweger was in this film, and she was also cut. It's kind of amazing they were in this film together, and then in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre film.
So first of all, as a Texan, there's two movies that, you know, two famous movies that have either Dallas or Texan title. If you're not going to be in WTS Dallas, you're going to be in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre series.
And I am.
You were. So as an actor from Texas, what's it like being in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre film?
Classic. I mean, I'd seen the original that Tobe Hooper did, but it was carny, man. We were shooting in 115 degree weather, myself and Renee Zellweger, about 16 hour days, and it was, I'll say carny, it was a lot of fun. And it was like anything goes. Man. It was anything goes. I actually had been offered the part of a role of a guy who shows up on a motorcycle at the beginning of the movie and at the end of the movie rides off with Renee Zellweger, sort of a Romeo to Juliet role. Yeah. That was never in the film. And when I went in to go, and I was all packed up to drive out to Hollywood because I just graduated college, right? I pull up to that audition to meet with the director with my truck and my U-Haul. I go inside. The director says, Kim Engel says, do you know anybody who would be right for the Vilma role? This is the role that I played, the killer with the trucker and the record service and stuff. And I said, no. And I thought of two friends that I knew from acting class, and I brought them up to him. And he goes, okay, I'll give him a call. I leave, shake his hand, go out. I remember I opened my truck door, started to step in, and I went, I want to read for that. Shut the door. I went back in, and I said, do you mind if I read for the Vilma part? He goes, no. We looked around. There's a secretary behind the desk, and he goes, all right, and went in the kitchen, got a spoon, and he goes, scare the shit out of her. And so we threw furniture around, had her pinned up against the wall, acted like the spoon was a knife, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he goes, now act like your mechanical leg is all messed up and did all this stuff. 5 minutes later, he goes, it's great. You want the part? I was like, yeah.
Amazing. All right, last question.
But the movie stars three people in particular, and that's yes. Andrew Lowry. He plays Johnny. Like we said, Tracy Lynn from Fright Night Part 2 and Class of 1999. Mm-hmm. And with this, that's kind of like a perfect trifecta of genre movies.
You didn't see the third person.
Well, I'm going to say, are we talking about Danny Zorn?
Yes, Danny.
Yeah, Danny Zorn. And there's, and by the way, R.I.P. But he was in two of the most 90s movies, which were also period movies, which was IQ, a romantic comedy
yes.
we will probably cover on this show, and Blast from the Past,
yes.
also a romantic comedy we'll probably cover on this show.
Love Blast from the Past. I'm so excited to talk about that film.
Well, we'll bring up your boy Danny Zorn again, for sure.
Andrew being the lead, or Andrew Lowry being the lead as Johnny. What do you think of him as the lead? What do you think about him and Missy and him coming back from the dead to take her to prom and her falling in love with him, even though he's a zombie? What do you think of their, you know, interdimensional dating?
I mean, following the logic of the movie, it's like a cute conceit.
It's a very, very capital C cute.
Yeah, right. His performance in particular, I think, is charming. You know, he's always got a big goofy smile on his face. He kind of does like a lot of the aw shuck stuff.
One of my favorite things about this film is the fact that they do not complete his zombie makeup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is one of my favorite things in the world, is that they do not go up to the edge of his face with the zombie makeup. They do it up to like an inch above his skin, and then you see an inch of skin around his face. It's the funniest thing ever, and he is working that so hard.
Yeah, but there might be a reason for that, at least from the filmmaker's perspective, you know, when we reach the conclusion of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Why the makeup or why the effects, like, look a certain way, right? Like, why they...
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's all built in internal to the logic of the movie. But just talking about him, I think he's super cute, and I think his family's super cute. Like, who wouldn't want Edward Herman and Mary Beth?
They play it really big, yet really down to earth. Mm-hmm. I think when you have a high concept comedy like this. It totally depends on the way all the characters handle the concept. And if no one gives it away, no one questions the fact that he's a zombie. They just accept it as soon as he comes back.
Right.
And I think that's kind of why it works.
Yeah, they almost treat him, you know, to use your point about maybe making it period, they almost use the fact that he's a zombie, like how in the 50s they would use something like this as a metaphor for race or, like, political affiliation.
Yeah, it's kind of touching on Night of Living Dead.
Right.
One of the most classic zombie movies ever, dealing with race and the outsider in zombie films. All right, another thing about Andrew. Do you know he's also a screenwriter himself?
No.
Yeah. Do you know he's part of a writing team, actually?
What? A famous writing team?
I would say some people might think it's famous.
Oh, yeah?
It depends on, you know, if you are well-versed in the early 2000s rise of the rom-com.
What?
Yep.
He himself.
Yep.
Star of My Boyfriend's Back, a horror rom-com, goes on to write rom-coms himself.
Yes.
And what did he write?
One in particular, Boys and Girls.
Ryan never had a way with women.
Hey, want to go get a cup of coffee?
I don't think that you and I really click.
I was just talking about getting a cup of coffee. Oh, maybe decaf for you.
Until he met his new college roommate.
If you're waiting for a girl to just walk over and do all the work, you got another thing coming, okay? They don't do things that way. Trust me.
Excuse me. Is your name Ryan?
What are the odds?
They're finding out what lines work and which ones don't.
Question. Exactly how far can you bend over?
Every woman looks at me like I'm their best friend. Brother.
Ooh, that's the kiss of death.
And they're discovering what happens to friends when going for it.
Why don't you drop the cool guy act and go tell Jennifer how you really feel about her?
Goes too far.
Are you in love with him?
What are you talking about? We're just friends.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you know Ryan's in your bed right now.
Yeah.
You know he's naked, right?
Yeah.
Best thing for you to do is just forget it ever happened. Forgotten yet?
No.
How about now?
Man, no.
Jeez, you're like an elephant.
Freddie Prinze Jr. Claire Forlani. Jason Biggs. Boys and Girls.
Ladies, can I walk you to your next class?
Okay.
Are you sure? I'm a great walker. All right.
What?
He is one of the Drews. Andrew Lowry and Andrew Miller wrote My Boys.
Whoa.
Yes, wrote Boys and Girls. The epitome of the bad coming-of-age rom-com at the dip of the, you know, resurgence.
God. That shit was rough. You think that one's the worst?
It's pretty bad. I just think
I don't know.
Freddie Prinze Jr. and Claire Forlani just have no chemistry at all.
I don't know. Boys and Girls is like
it's fun to watch. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, and it's also kind of low hanging fruit. I'm thinking about like Simply Irresistible. I don't know where you fall on that one.
Oh yes. That is a bananas one.
That one's
That's another
bonkers.
High concept. Right. The issue I have with Boys and Girls is that it's really trying hard to be like a really like intellectual rom-com in the way that the characters speak to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't sound like no one talks that way.
Yeah.
I just feel like people in real life do not talk like that to each other at all.
What about, Freddie Prinze Jr. had some bangers at this time. Down to You?
Yes.
Whatever happened to Sean Hattersley? Look him up. He was in like everything like that at this time.
Oh, Sean Hattersley. Okay.
Right?
Yes, I know who he is now.
Wasn't he in like everything at this time?
He was in a lot of things. He was kind of like the dumb stoner bro, right?
He's like who you got when you couldn't get Seth Green.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to speak of, I think Zach Orth is in Loser, which I love.
Oh my God.
That's a dumb film, but I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's an example of a dumb film that thinks it's like a super smart film too.
It does.
Because it thinks it's fucking Catcher in the Rye.
But I think that film is more charming than Oh, Boys no, for and sure. Girls.
But that's Amy Heckerling. That's like it a is. Competent filmmaker.
It is.
Like making a movie with Jason Biggs. Man, oh my God. Jason Biggs was such a thing for a while.
Yeah. And then he was like, remember when he came back with, you know, Orange is the New Black? Because he was played the husband.
Oh, he's on that? I've never seen that show.
He's on the first season and then he's gone. And then he went disappeared again.
He does that. He comes back long enough to say hi, and then you're like, oh, it's my absentee father. And then he leaves, and then you're like, where are you? And then he's just
like the guy you see at the 10-year reunion.
But he always goes back to fuck the pie. Yeah. Because then, like, Orange is the New Black came out the same year as American Reunion, right? Yeah. Yeah. So see? He uses the goodwill to go fuck more pies. Crazy. Crazy town.
That's an interesting ticket to use. Fuck the pie.
Like, oh, I'm back in the spotlight. Oh, I hope they let me fuck a pie again.
Yes, so Andrew Lowry wrote Boys and Girls.
Wow, he wrote Boys and Girls. Now, anything else produced? Or does he develop TV shows? Or
so he wrote another movie, but it's not well known at all. It's not...
Is it The House of Sand and Fog? With Jennifer Connelly and Sir Ben Kingsley?
I'm sure it's up to that quality.
Okay.
One called Nothing in 2003, which describes the reputation of this film. After a terrible day, two good friends and housemates find the outside world converted into a featureless and empty white void.
Jesus.
It stars one of the writers, Andrew Miller. Yeah.
Huh.
That's something we won't ever be covering.
So, Andrew Lowry, what movie are you working on right now?
Nothing.
No. But, like, you wrote Boys and Girls. You were the star of My Boyfriend's Back. What's your next project? What are you going to work on next?
Nothing.
You're playing a little difficult. We want to keep you employed in Hollywood. We thought you were a very charming actor in My Boyfriend's Back. Boys and Girls has a lot of lofty ideas. And, hey, your script attracted superstar Jason Biggs and million-dollar mega Hollywood mogul Freddie Prinze Jr. You can do anything you want. What script do you want to get us to produce?
Nothing.
Let's just move forward then, Mr. Lowry.
So, the reason we kind of picked this film is because it's a romantic comedy, but also has horror elements. Do you think it's more horror or more rom-com? If you had to put that hashtag on it, what would you do?
I would say My Boyfriend's Back, hashtag rom-com.
It does lean into that pretty heavy. Do you think that it works her falling in love with him after him being a zombie? Like having an ear fall off in your mouth.
Right.
Is that romantic?
Well.
We don't need to deep dive into your romantic endeavors, but let me know what you think.
Mm. Yeah, I would say that the screenwriter and Bob Balaban and the actors, particularly piece of shit Matthew Fox, I think they do a good job of illustrating that, like, Missy doesn't have the affection that Johnny can give her, you know? I think that's what she kind of likes. And the fact that he seemingly has come back from the dead just to do something as cute and quaint as, like, take her to prom.
But don't you think it's a little bit problematic that he, like, goes to these intense levels and she, like, has to fall in love with him?
She doesn't have to.
That's true. She doesn't have to.
She doesn't have to. I get what you're saying, though. But again... The alternative is that piece of shit Matthew Fox. So, like, if you're...
They were breaking up at the beginning of the film.
Right. Yeah, right?
Yes.
Right. So, I don't know.
I guess the whole point of this idea of her being romantically involved with him is that she's, you know, breaking off from the norm of her whole life and what she's been expected to do with Buck and everything and... falling for someone who, like, actually cares for her.
Right, and who the film proposes is actually always cared for her, like, his entire life.
Yes.
You know, he's always on the outskirts.
But he has always idolized her. There's a difference. He may have affection for her, but he's idolized her from afar. He doesn't know much about her.
Right. Yeah, so you're just saying it's like his... It's like his Kelly Kapowski.
But I guess this is where a lot of these genres have problems at this time. And still currently with a lot of these romantic comedies where, you know, the man does the great deed and the woman's expected to fall in love with him.
Yeah, but I mean the great deed in this is, what, he comes back from the dead.
And he doesn't eat her once he's back from the dead.
Right. Yeah, and he has... Well, yeah, here's something else, because the movie's full of awful fucking people. So, Phil Hoffman, bless his soul, R.I.P., he's not himself a terrible person, you know.
No.
He had his struggles, but that doesn't make him bad. But his character in this is, in that, you know, he of course plays Paul Dooley, Paul Dooley's son. Paul Dooley. He's also a Christopher Guest guy.
Ooh, there you go.
I wonder if Bob pulled him into Christopher Guest's troop there. But he plays Big Chuck's son. I think his name's also Chuck, right?
In Big Chuck's dad.
Well, I'm saying Phil Hoffman plays Big Chuck's son.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, here. Chuck Bronski?
Yep.
Oh, Bronski.
Yes.
Bronski. God damn it. There's three. So there's Big Chuck, Chuck, and Buck. It's just like, yes. Jesus Christ. Like, let's telegraph every, you know,
yes.
bad guy
these
with the buck.
These people are horrible.
It all rhymes with fuck.
Exactly.
Which is like how you know that they're bad.
Exactly.
Right?
So they're all bad.
So Phil Hoffman is, you know, he sees his high school peer, Johnny, back from the dead. And Phil Hoffman's first response is to take out an axe and try to, like, straight up axe murder him.
It's kind of interesting that Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is, like, he doesn't really speak in this film. He's kind of just brawn.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so interesting because when he goes on in his career, like, he's not known for being this kind of character.
Right.
He's kind of known about being this very literate, like, well-spoken character in a lot of his films.
Right.
And in this film, he, like, maybe speaks, like, two or three words.
Right. I was wondering if maybe you'd like to go to...
What are you doing? What is this?
I'm so sorry. I'm an idiot.
Well, no kidding.
I would walk on glass.
What are you looking at?
Nothing.
Dirt bag.
Buck, hi.
Hi.
Dead little snot.
You think you can hang out with us decent living folks like you're still alive or something?
Hey, we're watching you, dead boy. We don't like your kind. You're stinking up the whole school.
Chuck!
What are people gonna say? My girlfriend.
Johnny.
Gotcha! Jeez! Damn it!
Holy!
Come here, you stinky dead yellow toucher!
Stop him!
Come here!
Come on!
Chuck, you don't understand! Come on, Chuck! Just sit down and just hatch this thing out! I'm gonna kill you, dead boy! Come here!
We should have...
Come here, you stinky dead yahoo toucher!
Chuck, look.
Chuck, let's discuss this.
Okay.
Or even when he is used as a physical presence, his physical presence is used kind of mousy. You know, like when he played Capote or when he plays Scotty in Boogie Nights, he's like this very mousy little person. He isn't like
in this one. He has like bruiser. This intense face.
Right. And he leads with his shoulders and his
exactly.
head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he's not really a tall person.
Right.
Or physically.
Or even heavy at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like, but just like his whole presence of what he does
right.
and how he leans in that way.
Yeah,
makes
super.
Makes him seem scarier.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Super
and then
interesting.
His brains get
but,
eaten.
Yeah. And his brains get eaten, but only after he accidentally kills himself by falling backwards onto his axe.
He doesn't fall backwards. He hits himself.
Oh, yeah. No, oh, yeah. yeah. Oh, and
the
then
axe.
He falls back. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
Which is the weirdest thing, and that's stayed with me my entire life.
Ugh.
It's terrifying.
So what I'm suggesting is you have these humans to differentiate them from our one zombie character. You have Phil Hoffman wanting to kill his peer. You have Paul Dooley wanting to avenge the death of his son, showing up at Edward Herman's house and Mary Beth Hurt's house with an armed mob, you know, two other guys with rifles. By the way, if you're going to Edward Herman's house with a gun, you're a piece of shit, period. Right? And no offense to Mr. Dooley. He himself seems like a very sweet person in real life, but his character is asking for it, right? And then, of course, you have Matthew Fox, who plays Buck Van Patten. You know he's a bad guy, again, because his first name rhymes with fuck, and he's got the two names, like a Van Patten or a Van Buren.
What are you saying like about people with last names instead of a Van? You're kind of insinuating something about us.
I didn't even insinuate it. I was very clear.
Blatant.
Oh, yeah. And I will cut this part in a way to benefit me.
No.
Oh, it's a funny thing, the way life works out sometimes. Assassins always have three names. Assassins always have one more than the rest of us. Assassins always have three names. It's been that way throughout history. Well, there's John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald and James Earl Ray and Mark David Chapman and Osama bin Laden isn't even an assassin, but we'll put him on the list.
I'll make sure it does not benefit you.
You want it uncut.
All the time.
All right. I don't even know what that means.
But
I'm saying these people are bad. But even then you have Edward Herman and Mary Beth Hurt, who are good people and presented as good people, but they're straight up kidnapping, like, children, right? Or people.
Yeah, with, like, a giant lollipop in their hand to make them look even more innocent.
Right! Yes! And they're keeping them in the refrigerator to feed to Johnny because they just want their boy to be happy.
And they're so earnest about it. They're like, oh, we just want you to be happy. Do you want me to like cut him up and serve it on the plate? We just want you to eat something. You just need to eat something. They just do that whole parent
thing. You just look like skin and bones.
Exactly. Yeah. They do that whole thing.
And Johnny's the one with the moral compass that's like, no, we're not kidnapping people. We're not eating people. We're not.
His whole moral compass thing is so interesting because it gets thrown around the ringer because he almost is. I mean, I think there's always this, like, innuendo. There's a sexual innuendo when it comes to anything psychological, like vampires, like Dracula, it's, you know, all sexual. But, like, he even has this, like, weird fantasy where he eats Buck's dad, but then it turns into Missy in, like, this super sexy outfit where she asks him to eat her. And it's, like, this really crazy scene where she's like, you need to eat me, you need to eat me. And it's just, like, this bonkers, like, whole representation for teenage sexuality that's just, like, dropped in this film.
Could this be the point in Johnny's life where he goes from idolizing, because this whole thing is a metaphor, and we'll get to that here in a second. But could, like, within this metaphor, could this be Johnny's, the change he's going through in his life where he goes from idolizing the pretty girl, the smart girl, the popular girl, to like sexualizing her, and like this is all a way his brain is dealing with the way that his perception of her is changing.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty much kind of what they're leaning into.
Yeah, because it's not a consideration of him to eat her, you know, in the zombie sense where like I'm going to eat your brainstem or whatever.
Yeah,
but then when he is eating this other person, he starts fantasizing it's her. And then, we get that sexual language where it's like, eat me.
Yeah.
Eat me up. Eat every bite of me.
Yeah, I like your sexy girl voice.
Do you? This is Fantasia.
So
I do this on my other show. Hang up the phone. I'm outside waiting for you.
But it's so funny that it's like, but then it's like this weird dream that happens that she like wants him to eat her. But the thing is, like, he just like needs to eat flesh as a zombie.
All right, let's reveal it. So that was a dream we were having within a greater dream. All right. And what's all going on here? Let's pull the curtain back.
It's from 1993. Right. Let's not too precious with the.
What? With the spoilers?
Yeah, with the premise. Let's not be too precious with the premise.
One of the most popular shows on television just before this movie was made was St. Elsewhere. Do you remember the end of St. Elsewhere?
Careful with that, son. Remember I told you that? I don't understand this autism thing, Pop. Here's my son. I talked to him. I don't even know if he can hear me. He sits there all day long in his own world, staring at that toy. What's he thinking about? All right, come on, son. Let's go wash our hands, all right?
Where they reveal that the whole conceit, the whole hospital thing, is just a kid playing, and it was all in his mind.
Yeah, that became really popular around right. this time.
Right, or Bob Newhart waking up, and yeah. and it was the ending to his old show.
But I would say that it works more in this film, because it would make everything else make sense.
Right, and it's, you know, smarter filmmakers with you know, the material that they're given.
Yeah, it makes it all, it's like, oh, okay, so that's why everyone understood the premise so quickly.
Right.
It was in my head
right.
the whole time.
No, exactly. Yeah.
So.
That's why the makeup looks bad, because it's a child's approximation of what this would look like
yes.
based on the bad movies that he's watched, you know, up to that point.
Exactly.
Right. So, Lex, do you have any rumors or trivia?
Well, you know, another piece of information I'm going to drop on you, besides the Drews.
Mm.
Is Peter Jackson was originally supposed to direct this film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would have been right before Heavenly Creatures, and it would have been right after Brain Dead, which was released here as Dead Alive.
Hmm.
And then he did, I think Heavenly Creatures comes after that. And then from there he gets Frighteners, Lord of the Rings, and...
Because this goes right along... the same lines as what he's done before.
Yeah, sure. I could see...
Although his first films, as comedic as this one is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Funnier. Yeah.
Funnier than My Boyfriend's Back? Not possible.
Well, not as romantic and funny, but I mean...
Doesn't lean so hard in the romance?
No, he doesn't lean as hard into the romance.
That's why Bob Bellman right? was called in to do the job.
Sure. No, I think, you know, of a filmmaker like Peter Jackson or Bob Balaban. I could also see someone, although he would have been, I think, too outside of the realm of possibilities, but like Sam Raimi would have been
yes.
good for this too. Like he kind of has that whimsical 50s vibe down
and
makes it.
I think that this film would make a really good double feature with like The Burbs or something like that.
Oh yeah, sure. Or Parents. I think this would be a great double feature.
It just makes me want more Bob Balaban movies, honestly.
Yeah.
I just wish he would, like, do a Kickstarter. I'll give you some money. I know other people will give you some money. Let's get you another movie.
Oh, he's a fun director. He had some episodes of the 1980s reboot of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. I think he did a couple Amazing Stories with Mick mm-hmm. Garris and Spielberg there. Now, When I think of Renaissance people, Bob Balaban is like definitely on the short list. Like,
and he's under the radar.
He does it all. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he does it all under the radar. And he does it all under the guise of like that guy. Like, I know that guy from everything. Right.
Yeah. And he's like the dad in Ghost World. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what I think the whole world thinks of him as, is like that guy. And I'm sure when you meet him, like he's like this really engaging, great, like interesting person.
He
just plays that dry, like super mellow, everything going over his head kind of character so well.
That's what he does now, because he looks that part now, yeah. and that's like what we accept for. Like one of his first movies, he's amazing. He's in Midnight Cowboy, and he plays one of the Johns that picks up Buck. Well, here we go back to Bucks, but he picks up Joe Buck. And spends some time with him in the movie theater. And then Joe Buck goes to hit him up because, you know, he spent, mm-hmm. he did a date with him. And it's most of the scene is Bob Balaban, like, explaining that he's not going to pay him and he doesn't have any money. And, hey, do you have to beat me up now? It's just, like, super creepy. And it makes you feel so shitty for, like, John Voight's character. And mm-hmm. it's so, like, against, like, everything else that Bob Balaban ends up.
being known for.
Yeah.
Young actor Bob Balaban had a small part in Midnight Cowboy. His uncle Barney had been president of Paramount since 1936.
And Barney said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm in the Midnight Cowboy, and I have this part in it." And he said, "I'd love to see it. I hear the picture's kind of interesting. I don't know if it'd come out yet." So the next time I saw him at his office... in the Gulf and Western building, he had the cans, you know, because movies come in big old fat cans, and it said Midnight Cowboy on it. And I said, "Oh, well, I don't know if he's going to take too well to this movie," in which I was the X rating. I didn't really do anything, but it was heavily implied that I performed oral sex on John Voight in the movie theater balcony. And I said, I'm not sure that Barney, this is not Barney's kind of picture. I don't know what's going to happen. And I saw him a couple weeks later, and he'd obviously seen the movie, and he didn't bring it up, and I didn't bring it up.
Yeah, go back and watch his scene in Midnight Cowboy. It's haunted me ever since I seen it.
I would love to interview him about this movie.
Yeah.
And the him...
Or just his life.
Yeah, I mean...
Francois Truffaut's...
You know, I hear they're bringing back Inside the Actor's Studio, and I really think that they should do Bob Balaban.
That'd be great.
I recommend him for the first season.
No, I recommend Bob Balaban to replace James Lipton. Like, Bob Balaban should be the guy running fucking Inside the Actor's Studio.
Yeah. And he could, like, drop all these little tidbits of how he's in this movie. Like, you know, like, oh, I used to direct this. I directed this film called My Boyfriend's Back with one of the guys who became the Drews. And you're like, what?
I know.
He became one of the Drews?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, well, he's certainly less problematic than James Lipton, who was, what? He's like a catcaller for a brothel in France. Like, Bob Balaban's French relations are just interpreting for Francois Truffaut, who I'm going to keep saying his name.
I think you just like saying
his name. I do.
It's a fun name to say.
Well,
I mean, talk about fun names to say. Bob Balaban? Like, that alliteration.
Bob Balaban's fun.
Because you have the double, you have like the triple alliteration.
Yeah.
Bob Balaban.
Right. And it's you gotta love how purposeful it is. Because he could easily be a Robert.
Oh, he could.
Or a Rob.
Yeah, he'd be a Robert.
I mean, Rob Balaban. That's fun. But I like the fun.
he dove in so hard into that B
Bobby,
sound.
Bobby Balaban.
Bob Balaban.
Bobby Dazzler, Bobby Balaban. Bobby Dazzles. And Bob Balaban. New movie. Pumpkin Patch Surprise. All right. What do we got? Anything else? So this would have been, you said this at the top of the show, this would have been the first film for both Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey.
Yes.
Making it, it would have been the Holy Trilogy. It would have been My Boyfriend's Back, Dazed and Confused, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation. We could have had like,
oh, that would have been the best. That
we could have had a triptych of... Wouldn't that be best triptych?
That's insane. I could just see that happening. Too bad. I mean, I wonder if we could find Bob Balaban and ask him to put her scene back in.
I mean...
Just to have that.
Well, just a double feature of Dazed and Confused and Texas Chainsaw The Next Generation is good enough. But man, yeah. I would
have... Having that other one in there.
That would have been sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have also just cut out the Linklater movie, too. And we could have just gone like strictly like double feature...
But Dazed and Confused is so good.
You don't really need an excuse to watch that. You might need an excuse to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation.
People come for the Dazed and Confused and stay for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation.
Oh, no. What you do is you bury Dazed and Confused in the final slot.
There you go.
Because you do a 7 p.m. Yeah, here we go. You do a 7 p.m. My Boyfriend's Back because it's like fun. And then you do a 9 p.m. Texas Chainsaw Massacre because, you know, that's an appropriate time for that. But then, yeah, the banger, 11 o'clock, you do Dazed and Confused. And it kind of rolls into being an early midnight movie. And I think it's a good early midnight movie.
That's a great triple feature. I want to go watch all of those right now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we can't tie Renee Zellweger into it, but it's at least a Matthew McConaughey triple feature.
There you go. I hate to put Renee Zellweger as the bonus, but she's the bonus in the first two.
No. The bonus is, of course, Parker Posey, who you get to see at 11 o'clock that night.
I know your love for her goes to the moon and back.
All right. Let's.
So, do you think this is also a good horror movie? I know you said it's. You said it first off a rom com.
Do
you think that those horror elements work?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely think so.
There are some pretty traumatizing shots in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good gore gags. Really goofy gore gags. Yeah,
it makes you think like they had the condoms full of blood or paint. Mm-hmm. Go in and to be guts and stuff like that. It's fun, but it's also like it still makes you feel kind of squishy inside. Like,
right. Ooh. Yeah, and even the stuff that's not sight gags like that, when it's more just based on the dialogue and whatnot, like Mary Beth Hurt like suggesting she's going to kill this kid that she captured with a lolly. Like that's good. Like that's good. Like
it makes
creepy
you feel,
stuff.
It makes you feel uncomfortable. It's not like. right out jumping on you horror, but it makes you feel very uncomfortable and creeped out.
Right. Or the horror when you know, you're eating lunch at school and everyone's looking at you different. There's all this.
Yeah, it plays into a lot of those teen tropes.
And when he bites his friend, you know, that's creepy. The person that you trusted the most might turn on you now.
And he still supports them until the end.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, of course. All right, let me ask you this. We're going to do some quick Academy Award nominations. Academy Awards are, of course, one of the most important things you could give to a movie. It validates a movie for being good. So who,
yeah, out of all these... All the, every dollar was spent on it, yeah. Every person who worked on it.
Yep, absolutely. So if you were to give one Academy Award to My Boyfriend's Back, what would your Academy Award be?
I like this. This is a good game.
Is this a fun one? Fun, quick little thing? You have to give one Academy Award.
Uh-huh.
You don't necessarily need to think of 1993, because that's going to be your...
I'm not going to think about...
That's going to be your Schindler's List year.
Yeah. Okay? You can't beat that list.
You can't beat that list. I think that was the tagline for Spielberg's Schindler's List.
Definitely on the bottom of the poster.
You can't beat that list. It's a good-ass list.
I think... I'm just going to have to go back to the original and say the score.
The score?
Score,
you're giving
great.
Oh, that is awesome. You're giving Harry Manfredini the Oscar.
Yes. How about
over John Williams that
if
year?
If you're going to give it like the if I give its one presence in the entire universe, mm-hmm. like giving it an Academy Award, what would it be?
Best director, Bob Balaban.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I give you that.
Plus he got his start with Mr. Spielberg, so Stevie could get picture as producer, and Bob will just take the directing.
That's really well-rounded.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
How shitty would that be if there was, like, a movie and it only won Best Director and Best Score? And it was My Boyfriend's Back. But, like, I guess that in itself wouldn't be shitty. But then you look at, like, everything else and you're like, what else won
Schindler's
that year?
Schindler's List won Best Picture.
You're like, Daniel Day-Lewis? Schindler's List?
Yep.
That's funny.
Was he even in Schindler's List?
Schindler's List? No. I'm trying to remember who...
Wasn't Liam Neeson
who
in
won
that?
In 93? Oh, 93 was Philadelphia. Tom Hanks won Best Actor in 90. Well, because they do it the next year.
Yeah.
The 93 movie was Philadelphia, so the 94 was the Academy Award for Philadelphia. But
that's a good one.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah. But that would have been... yeah, Steven Spielberg won Best Director, so I'm taking it out of Stevie's hands.
I'd knock him out.
Yeah,
he's good, but I mean, come on, Bob Balaban.
Yeah, but imagine even just a nomination for Bob Balaban would have given us at least a decade of Bob Balaban movies.
That's true. That's all you really.
That's need. All. That's what we want. Yes. You know,
that's what I want in my soul is another
right.
decade.
Like the second Jordan Peele got nominated for Best Director, you're like, at least we get 10 more years of seeing what can happen.
Yes.
You know?
Hallelujah, praise the Lord. That's why we love the Academy Awards.
That's the only thing. is just elevating some of those artists. And Bob Balaban does need to be there. Now, did you know Bob Balaban was nominated for an Academy Award? Did you know he wrote the story to Gosford Park?
I think I read that in the IMDb, but that would make... That's an interesting one. That's not something you'd think he'd have his hands in.
Because he's also like one of the servers in the movie, but he wrote the story and then Julian Fellowes wrote the screenplay.
That's an interesting
he's
tie
like,
for
he
him
is
to
just
have his
like
hand in.
The Renaissance man.
He really is. I really want a shirt that says Bob Balaban, Renaissance man, with his face on it. That'll be our first t-shirt.
I want one. It's a protest shirt, and it says, Bob Bala banned the Oscars for never nominating My Boyfriend's Back. all right, let's bring it up. We might do another Spooky Movie Month pod here at F This Movie. We don't know for sure. We know we've teased in the past The Wedding Singer and The Baxter. And we do have those coming. But we might do another Spooky Movie Month selection for you. So, we might just be those basic bitches that do Shaun of the Dead. Because why the fuck aren't you guys talking enough about Shaun of the Dead?
That is like, the question I have on my brain. Why are we not all talking about Shaun of the Dead the entire month?
Yeah. And why, when you guys sit around, and I'm blaming everybody listening to this, when you sit around and write think pieces about the next Tarantino, why does no one just go, that person is here, and his name is Edgar Wright?
Okay, and if you want to hear the rest of that rant, listen to our next one on Shaun of the Dead.
All right.
I guess it's happening. Right. It's I'll happening. Oh, we're doing it. We're just going to do Shaun of the Dead. All right. Sounds good.
Ba-da-ba-ba, ba-da-ba-ba. Ba-dum-bum-bum.
And then in here, you should put a little piece of dialogue from Shaun of the Dead.
You got red on you?
Hosting us once again.
Not just hosting us. I mean, we're talking about a corporate conglomerate that gives us hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce this content for you.
It's true. We just live on an island and, you know, produce these every once in a while.
We're just podcast rich.
Exactly.
Every now and again, I'm like, Pat, does the website need anything? He's like, no, baby, you enjoy that scratch. He's like, I know it's called F This Movie, but it's more like F That Audience, am I right? And I'm like, Pat, you bitch. And he's like, nah, just kidding. Drop me a line on my boyfriend's back, motherfucker.
So thank you. And look out for Mr. Mike. Where can we find Mr. Mike?
I am at MikeD_Splat. I also have a show called The Splat House Podcast. At Splat House PR on Twitter. We just had our season premiere on the Blair Witch Project, and you're like, oh, that's cool. Everyone talks about the Blair Witch Project. Well, guess what? We had the co-director on. We had the production designer on.
Oh, my gosh.
We are fancy schmancy.
So fancy. Some
of us could save our Patrick Bromley money and afford to fly people in to do interviews for podcasts. And that is my show at Splat House PR.
And you can find me at Lexi, LexyMyranda, Lexi _Miranda on Twitter. And that's where you'll find me ranting about rom-cons every once in a while.
And if you want to know why our show is as good as it is, you will need to sign an NDA. I just thought about that when you spelled your name. You're like, NDA. I'm like, oh, that's badass.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No?
No.
Not really. All right. Yeah, I guess that's just how letters work. All right. So for everybody here at F This Movie, for Ms. Lexi Van Dyke, Miranda Van Dyke, for Miranda Van Dyke, this is Mike saying, take a hike and go get some romantic comedies. And they all are related to James L. Brooks. He is the godfather. He is the number one motherfucking most romantic man on the planet. We love you, James L. Brooks. That's why we dedicated this entire podcast to you. Love you, buddy. Bye.